Well, my name is Mike Bell. I'm running for the 7th Legislative District, House Seat Number 2, against Joel Kretz. This is my first venture into politics. I have to say I'm a politician now, but I'm not a career politician. I don't need a job, but I do need a good legislator, and the one we have right now I don't think is it. I'm a retired CPA. I operated a CPA practice working with healthcare organizations for about 20 years. 20 employees, 14 states, worked with about 100 hospitals and clinics and nursing homes. And we were very successful at it. I enjoyed it a lot. We worked with facilities to find the resources they needed to meet the community's needs. And over the years, we probably helped them get hundreds of millions of dollars into their communities as a result of things that opportunities that were available and our efforts to make sure that they knew about it and applied for those opportunities. I started out my career as a hospital corpsman in the Navy. My father was a retired Marine, and in 71, I volunteered to serve my country as a corpsman. I assumed I was going to be sent to Vietnam with the Marines, and I knew that up front, but instead the Navy sent me to work in the submarine service. And so I spent 5 years as a corpsman in the submarine service. A lot of people think that's a plush job, but not really. There were two nuclear-powered submarines that were lost in the 10 years prior to my serving in the submarine service. So it was a hazardous assignment, but I enjoyed it. The technology was great, and because I've got a military background, I enjoyed my time in the service.
So when you talk about, let's go back to the healthcare. How is the healthcare system, when you worked in it, different than the healthcare system now? And have things gotten, how have things changed to make it worse so that we're continually seeing increases in our costs and our premiums and that sort of thing?
Well, let me just say that The biggest concern I've got in healthcare right now is in rural areas. I've worked with every one of the hospitals and clinics in the 7th District. I was up in a Republic recently talking to them, and they said that their most important asset in the community was a hospital. And I explained to them that 7 years ago, bad debts and charity care had just about killed off all the hospitals in rural America. They were growing at the tune of 25% a year, so $1 million in bad debts, and several years later, it's $2 million, and they were out of cash. Liabilities were high. They had already tapped the community for everything they could get, and a lot of them, I think, were on the brink of going under. And then, all of a sudden, the bad debts declined from, you know, in the example, $2 million to $1 million, and then it declined again to $650,000. And suddenly they were back in the black. Their cash reserves were going back up, and that was what saved them. That was 7 years ago.
Can I ask, why did their debts decline so drastically?
Well, it was because of the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act required people to get insurance, expanded Medicaid, and so it brought in or reduced the uncompensated care, bad debts and charity care, that was causing them such financial problems. And so my opinion is this, that if you voted against the Affordable Care Act, for those folks in Republic and Chihuahua and Colville and Newport, you were voting against your local hospital, because that was the one thing that saved them. And there was one legislator that voted 50 times against the Affordable Care Act, and that was Kathy McMorris Rogers. So she effectively voted 50 times to close the hospital that you consider the most important asset. That, to me, suggests that that a lot of people are uninformed about the benefits of the Affordable Care Act. And the concern I've got now is that the bad debts are starting to creep up again because the current administration is undermining the Affordable Care Act. The individual mandate is not required. Insurance companies are not getting the subsidies that they require. Insurance rates are skyrocketing, and it wouldn't surprise me if this time next year those bad debts are back up to where they were 7 years ago, and we're then jeopardizing the rural hospital systems.
So let me go one step deeper. How did the Affordable Care Act help those hospitals reduce their debts?
Well, the Affordable Care Act actually, the bad debts in charity care were primarily caused by uninsured patients. And, of course, the small rural hospitals accept one and all, regardless of your ability to pay. And so the Affordable Care Act expanded Medicaid, which covered, I think, 700,000 people here in Washington. It also required individuals to buy insurance, and some of them, many of them, were subsidized so they could afford it. It required employers to provide insurance. So the uninsured rates declined significantly, and of course the inverse of that is that bad debts and charity care also declined. But now we're seeing that trend reverse, and it concerns me a lot. I worked very hard for 25 years to make sure those hospitals stayed open, and we didn't lose any during my time. But I'm afraid that we're on the verge of seeing a significant change in rural health care, and that bothers me because it appears that a lot of people are voting against their own interest.
So as a state legislator, what would you do in Olympia? Because you don't have authority over the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act could be nullified, reversed by Congress. What do you do in Olympia to counteract that?
Well, I think in Olympia what we have to do is take a look at the rural hospital systems, and if the federal government is not going to step in and make sure that they have the resources they need, then I think the state needs to step in and take its place. So that's what I can do, is make sure that people are aware of the danger. We don't want to wait until after hospitals are closing, because once they close, they don't open up again very easily. The professionals in the community move out. Frankly, if rural hospitals close, that community probably will shrink dramatically. For every hospital job that's lost, there's one or two or maybe even three jobs in the community, because employers don't want to move to a hospital, to a community that does not have a hospital. And retired people don't want to live in a community without a hospital. So it could be catastrophic for rural Washington and other rural places around the country. So I can be the voice of those rural communities and make sure that it gets the attention they need. There are other healthcare issues too. Rural ambulance services right now, throughout the state, no one is responsible for ambulance transport. The fire departments are the first responders in rural areas, and once they've stabilized the patient, they're ready for transfer. Sometimes they can get an ambulance transfer, and sometimes it takes hours to get that. The state needs to step in and see how we can improve that transport system so it better serves the community. I think that, you know, rural America, in fact, throughout the state, we need a minimum standard for health care. We need a minimum standard, and that includes ambulance transport. We need a minimum standard, too, for education, and the state needs to do what it can do to make sure those minimum standards are maintained.
You've also got a background in education, is that correct? Some education?
Well, I don't have a background in education, although when I practiced as a CPA, I put on educational programs for my clients and for anybody else that was willing to learn. I wanted them to know as much about healthcare and the rules and regulations and the opportunities as I did. We were never short on business. My wife said that the busy season started in January and ended in December. It wasn't unusual to put in 60 or 80 hours a week, and I enjoyed the work, and that's why I worked that hard. But education was a very big part of our practice, and we put on seminars all the time, and in many cases did not charge for the service. We just wanted to make sure people were knowledgeable of their industry.
So you live in the southern part of the 7th District. As a Democrat, it's very difficult to win. Tell me about the challenge of trying to convince people in deep rural northeastern Washington that you're the right person for them.
Well, as I mentioned, I'm not happy with the legislator we've got. He's at the far reaches of the legislative district. And by the way, the 7th Legislative District goes from the Spokane Y all the way up to Newport and to the Canadian border and across to Republic and over to Omak and Tenasket and then back down into Nine Mile Falls. So it's as big as some states. But let me just say that It is a challenge. I took it up because my opponent has not been challenged since 2004. And because I had a deep background in healthcare, what got my attention was when my opponent, Joel Kretz, stalled the WSU Medical School funding over a grudge that he had with WSU. And that, to me, is appalling. The WSU Medical School is one of the biggest healthcare events in Eastern Washington the last 50 years, and to stall it over something as ridiculous as a research paper is just appalling behavior.
Into wolf behavior.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. The other thing I know is that that Joel has accepted $500,000 or more in corporate and corporate PAC contributions, and he's, you know, as an auditor, I kind of look into issues, and as I looked in, I found even more things to be concerned about. $1,500 in purchases from Men's Warehouse for corporate contributions, $300 seafood purchases that he and his wife were showing pictures of back in his home in Wakanda, many other purchases, cell phones, dish. He's enhancing his own personal lifestyle through corporate contributions. And in contrast, I don't take corporate contributions. I worked on I-735, which was get corporate money out of politics, reverse Citizens United. This is something I did a number of years ago after I retired, and I'm very proud of that. I think if we get money out of politics, we can cure most of the problems we've got in Washington and in Olympia. Right now, corporations expect to get $10 back for every dollar that they put into a political candidate's pocket. And one of the things that I'm looking at now, I'm working with a tax reform group, is that corporations in the state receive 650 tax breaks that have been legislated by our legislature in Olympia for creating jobs. And yet, during the 14 years that Joel has been supporting those cuts, there has not been one look back, none. If a corporation promised to provide 500 jobs, no one's looked back to see if that actually occurred. My opinion is if you promised 500 jobs and you didn't deliver, I want my money back, and I want it back to the beginning. And our group has estimated that that's hundreds of millions of dollars, if not $1 billion every 2 years that we're giving away and not even knowing if we're getting our money's worth. I can look into that. Joel cannot because he's on the corporate take. And so as long as he's continuing to take corporate money, that issue is not going to be addressed.
You talked about being part of a tax reform group. So do you support the governor's proposal for a carbon tax? Do you support a state income tax?
Let me just say that on tax reform right now, we've got the most regressive taxes in the country. The people at the bottom are paying 17%. The people at the top paying 3%.
This is as a percentage of their income?
As a percentage of their income, yeah. Yes. I appreciate you clarifying that. And that's totally unreasonable. I think property taxes are too high. I think sales taxes are too high. And we need to change it so everybody's paying their fair share. In the legislative district that I would represent, the average person's paying $3,500. They should be paying $2,500 if they were paying the average. And I can tell you that if you give those people $1,000, they'll stimulate the economy. Whereas the people at the top will just buy some additional stock. I don't support an income tax. That's just not going to work here in the state of Washington, and I wouldn't propose it. But I would propose some tax on maybe long-term capital gains. People, when you sell land, when you sell livestock, when you sell a car, you pay taxes. When you buy and sell stock, you pay nothing. And so this tax break is directed at those people that can best afford to pay their fair share, and yet they don't. 3% is totally unreasonable when the average in the state is 6. So we're in the process of studying this issue. In fact, there are several tax conferences or meetings this week, and I plan on attending them all to hear what ideas are out there. But the income tax thing is just not on the table We have other opportunities we can use.
So there's one other issue in the 7th, and it's a local issue, but it's getting a lot of attention. That's up in Newport with the proposal of building a silicon smelter very near town. How do you come up? What are your views on that one?
Well, let me just say I'm very much in favor of creating jobs and good-paying jobs in the 7th District and throughout the state. Building a smelter 1 mile from downtown Newport would be like building a smelter 1 mile from downtown Spokane or right in the middle of Suncrest, where I live, in 9 Mile. And they can come up with a better location than that. I'm not particularly opposed to the smelter, but we need to find the proper location. Well, they're saying that the power is there. Well, you know, have you ever heard of power lines? You can move the power. That was created 100 years ago, and there's no reason why it needs to be in downtown Newport. The other thing I have a problem with is that this was kind of done in the middle of the night without saying anything to anybody. The county shifted the land to the PUD, and then the PUD immediately sold it to the Canadian company. There's something fishy there that needs to be looked into. And so I support the people in Newport that are saying, once this smelter is built, our home prices are going to go down, our quality of life is going to go down, and I believe that we can find a much better location that is the same distance from Spokane, accomplish everything that we want to accomplish by creating jobs without actually harming people as much as this current proposal does.
Okay, those are my questions. Were there any issues I didn't raise or anything that you wanted to talk about that was important to you?
Well, we've covered quite a few issues. The McCleary decision, another reason I ran, I've got 6 children, 7 grandchildren, and I was appalled when I heard that the court had to define what is the absolute bare minimum funding for education here in the state of Washington. And that is required by the Constitution. Well, I've never settled for absolute bare minimum in my life, and I'm not about to settle for absolute bare minimum when it comes to my children and grandchildren. They need a high-quality education. They need an education that will prepare them for the future and our future, and it's an investment. And so I was appalled that the court had to step in. I was appalled when the legislature took several years to come up with the money for that. And I was appalled when my opponent, Joel Kretz, voted against the funding for education that would bring it up to the absolute bare minimum. I think we need to see what we can do to enhance education far beyond the absolute bare minimum. The other thing that I have an issue with is that my opponent has, for 14 years now, talked about jobs as his number one issue. Well, the unemployment rate is the highest in the state, and it's going up at a time when the unemployment in the state is going down, and statewide is going down, and yet in the 7th District it continues to rise. We're the most economically depressed in the area. The corporations that have contributed to his campaign, to my knowledge, have not created one job in the 7th District. And so after 14 years, if I couldn't do any better than that on my number one highest priority, I'd quit. And so I would ask Joel and the other voters out there to evaluate Joel's behavior on corporate contributions, on education, on creating jobs. And if he's not getting the job done, then let me do it, because I was damn good at what I did when I worked for healthcare organizations, and I'll be damn good at what I do as a legislator. And I'm one that gets the job done, and if I can't, it's not due to lack of trying on my part.